Issues Etc. is listener-supported. We rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Now, if you appreciate Issues Etc., please consider making a tax-deductible gift today. You can make a secure online contribution at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Issues Etc., Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. And thanks for your support.
I buy not to myself to make the strong name of the Trinity by the invocation of the same, the three in one and one in three.
A little bit of a hymn attributed to St. Patrick, who's being remembered by the world and the church on this day. I bind unto myself today, sung by the Corpus Christi Male Chorale, a hymn to the Trinity that focuses in the end on the centrality of Jesus Christ in Christian revelation and preaching. St. Patrick was a missionary to Ireland. Most people know he had something to do with Ireland, didn't know that he was a bishop missionary to Ireland, visited that island the first time as a captive slave, and then later as a bringer of the gospel. We'll be remembering him along with the rest of the church. Dr. Bill Weinrich will be our guest here in the first few minutes of Issues Etc. Greetings and welcome. We are coming to you live on this St. Patrick's Day from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. A little bit later, Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will join us for our ongoing series on responding to evangelical proof text today. The big one, the Great Commission, that I have observed is often turned into the not-so-great Commission. Adrian Dorr-Hyens and Jonathan Fisk will join us together. We're going to be doing some conversation, responding to a PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly story about millennials, that is the young generation, not the youngest, but young adults, and religion. Then Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse will be with us. We'll get her thoughts on outrage over a pro-natural family comments made by a couple of prominent fashion designers. You've seen that all over the news. And a bill recently passed by the Oklahoma House of Representatives abolishing government-issued marriage licenses. We'll see what she thinks about those. And then a brief reflection with Pastor Matt Harrison in the last few minutes of the program on the life and the legacy of the sainted Lutheran theologian, teacher, professor, pastor, and frequent guest here on Issues Etc., Dr. Ronald Feuerhahn, who passed away over the weekend. Pastor Matt Harrison will give us his thoughts on Dr. Feuerhahn's recent death. Our call-in number for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-6943. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at @issuesetc. Or our beloved on-demand listeners, wherever and whenever you listen, please use the Issues Etc. comment line. It's there for you 24/7, 618-223-8382. On the St. Patrick's Day, joining us to remember this 5th century bishop and missionary to Ireland, St. Patrick, Dr. Bill Weinrich, professor of historical theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Dr. Weinrich, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you, Todd. Always good to be with you.
Before we get to the subject, we are having this conversation in the wake of the death of a mutual friend and colleague, Dr. Ronald Feuerhahn, who is a professor of historical theology at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. As a fellow historian, what are your thoughts on his life and his legacy?
Well, he was, I knew Ron a very long time. If I recall correctly, I first got to know him pretty well when I was on sabbatical leave at Cambridge. He was at Westfield House at that time. And then he became professor of history, modern Lutheran history, really. He was really an expert on the ecumenical movement, and I think in many ways made his greatest contributions explaining that difficult, important, and complex history to our students and our church body. I knew him also in Latvia. He was, and not only there, but he was invited there numerous times to give presentations. But what characterized Dr. Feuerhahn, in my judgment, beyond all things, was to be sure he was a very fine scholar, but he wedded his scholarship with a remarkable humility and gentleness. The tenor of his voice was gentle, his face was gentle, everything about him was gentle. And so I think in many ways, as I recall Dr. Feuerhahn, it is as this remarkable, gentle man who also was a very fine church historian. And I might say, as your listeners may or may not know, for the last, say, some years, I've forgotten exactly how many, three, four, whatever it is, he suffered Parkinson's and with great final disability, and we would see him here from time to time in his motorized wheelchair. His wife, Carol, a total lady throughout all of this, and they together in this time of incurable malady, and as he continued to kind of degenerate, they were just a model of Christian virtue and humility, long-suffering. And so I think beyond his teaching, frankly, those who were able to witness how he uncomplainingly assumed to himself his final difficulty really is the marker of the man.
Turning to the subject at hand, we're talking here in the man we call Saint Patrick. We're talking about someone who is, he's well known but often misunderstood, and like most things that get garbled by modern culture, he's taken up by the culture largely for debauchery. Why do we know so much about this particular 5th century missionary?
Well, actually, I wish it were so. We know very, very little about him, actually. I mean, he looms large in tradition and looms larger perhaps for us, as you noted, because of St. Patrick's Day and all the festivities associated with him. When we come to hard history, however, we know really very little about the man. And what we know about him is by virtue of two documents, which I think scholars are pretty much agreed upon are authentic to him. One is sometimes in English called the dedication, sometimes called the confession, where he more or less in a hymnic poetic fashion recounts his life. Much like Augustine, it is a life told by way of the purpose of God for him, so it's not strict biography as we might judge it these days. But by and large, I think it's a fair window upon his life. The second is a letter to Caroticus, who apparently was a Irish tribal chieftain who had fallen away from the faith or some difficulties knowing exactly what the circumstances were. But beyond these two documents, we know really very little about him other than what we might glean from kind of mediated sources like the Venerable Bede or something. So not too much. But what we do know, and there's no reason to doubt this, is that he was part of that 5th century scene. His dates also were somewhat uncertain. Oftentimes he's said to be born around 380, thereabouts, died, some say 460, 61, a few say later in the 5th century, primarily, as you noted, a 5th century figure. But his activity was within a very difficult time for the British Isles, what we now know as England proper, not so much Ireland. And what had happened is that the Roman Empire was collapsing in the West, and threats also in the East. And the Emperor Honorius I withdrew all of the Roman soldiers, much like Obama withdrawing American forces in Iraq and so forth. It left a vacuum that was quickly filled, and it was filled by the onrush of Saxons and the Angles from what now is roughly Denmark, but also these outlying tribes like the Picts in the northern part of Scotland. These various pressures pushed the Anglo-Roman population, that mixed population of the native British and the Roman soldiers, who had been more or less Christianized, pushed them kind of increasingly toward the west, what is today Cornwall and Wales. And Patrick was part of this turmoil period of history. He tells us he was born into a Christian family. Again, times were very unsettled. As a young teenager, around 15 or so, he was captured by Irish pirates, that is to say, persons from the island of Ireland, who raided the coastal cities and so forth, and they took him, and no doubt many others, prisoner and made him a slave. And he tells us that by virtue of a dream, he was told to escape, to flee, and to return by boat to England, which presumably he did, and perhaps went back to his family for some short period of time. But what is important for his history is that he seems also to have been part of the episcopal family, as it might be called, of Bishop Germanus of Auxerre in the middle of France, what is called the Gaul at that time. Germanus was, there was deep connections between the British Isles and Gaul, and Germanus had been called over already in the early 400s to argue against the Pelagians. But he had also worked against the Druids. And it was by way of Germanus of Auxerre, apparently, that Patrick was ordained to be Bishop of Ireland. And so he was apparently commissioned by Germanus to actually go to Ireland. Now, how this exactly relates to another vision, which Patrick said he had, where a man whom he called Victorinus approaches him, and he hears the voices of the Irish saying, "Come back and walk with us again." And so he has both an episcopal as well as, you might say, a visionary call to go to Ireland. In any case, he does so. And I think one of the remarkable aspects of the whole story is that he's remarkably successful in gaining the conversion of royalty and many of the people, and introducing a more or less settled Christianity there, however, upon tribal basis. The bishops were largely tribal chieftains. The Christianity that he introduces also had a very deep monastic, ascetic character to it. But the fact of the matter is, he was part of a number of significant figures, St. Ninian, St. Finian, for example, to mention two others, who were part of the Christianization of the British Isles. So the story is compelling, no doubt about it.
Dr. Bill Weinrich is our guest when we come back with him a few more minutes, talking about 5th century missionary to Ireland, St. Bishop St. Patrick. We'll be right back.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/Luther Academy.
The substitute organist service has been a great blessing for our worship life here at Christ the King Lutheran in Riverview, Florida.
Pastor Kevin Yoakum on the substitute organist service.
Now our organ plays rich liturgical music every single Sunday, and it's very affordable. You pick the hymns, you pick the liturgies. It's very simple. Just know when to push play.
You can find out more about the Substitute Organist Service at churchmusicsolutions.com. churchmusicsolutions.com.
The faith once for all delivered to the saints. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe that traditional Lutheran preaching, liturgy, and hymnody continue to deliver Christ crucified for sinners today. The Reformation attempted to return the Church's focus on what we do for God back to a focus on what God does for us, that Christ died for our sins in accordance with the Scriptures. Some things never change. The gospel is still under attack from inside and outside the Church. To see how Lutheran doctrine and practice preserve the gospel, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Faith Lutheran Church and School in Plano, Texas preaches Christ crucified. Join us each Lord's Day to hear law and gospel preaching and to receive the Lord's Supper. Our classical preschool through grade 12 Lutheran school is second to none. The school serves home educators, too, with online classes in the high school. We are located at 1701 East Park Boulevard in Plano, Texas. Reach us by phone at 972-423-7448 or on the web at www.flsplano.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about St. Patrick on the St. Patrick's Day with Dr. Bill Weinrich, Professor of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And sometimes these things happen as they did in the ancient world by happenstance. I do not know necessarily that St. Patrick had intended to return to Ireland when he had escaped once, but God had other intentions for him, and thus he has his place in history. Now, today, men are being formed and prepared for the pastoral ministry, for that kind of distinct missionary work that takes place in the pulpit right there in front of the pews. At Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, the preparation is careful, it is meticulous, it is well thought out, and it is thorough as well. They're forming servants in Jesus Christ who teach the faithful, reach the lost, and care for all. Find out more about Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, on the web, ctsfw.edu, or give them a call, 1-800-481-2155, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Dr. Weinrich, when he arrives back as missionary bishop, how would you describe the religious sensibilities, to put it mildly, of the Irish people that he encountered there?
Well, they were pagans, as we would call them, and they had their tribal deities. He is often the symbol of St. Patrick, as you know, is the shamrock. To what extent that has historical basis to Patrick is disputed. It became, in any case, and maybe he used it as a symbol for the Trinity. We have this wonderful hymn in our hymn book, as you may know, "I Bind Myself Today to the Holy Trinity." And it wasn't uncommon for the tribes of Ireland to have kind of what might be called deities by three. And to the extent that was the case, perhaps he was able in that way to kind of address to them the mysteries of the Trinity, and certainly known by way of the incarnation of Christ. The most important religious opposition would have been, however, the Druids, which were deeply characterized by a wedding of natural oak forests and holy trees and natural forces and deities and so forth, and they often had deep roots also in the royalty and the nobility. They were a powerful force. And in fact, although it's not quite certain, the story of Patrick causing all of the snakes of Ireland to flee may have its roots in his opposition to the Druids and his overcoming the Druid faith largely by replacing it with Christianity. I'm not sure that Ireland ever had any problem with snakes as such, but the snake symbol was part of the Druid symbolism, and so it may be, and I emphasize a little bit the word may here, it may be that the legend of him driving the snakes out actually is a story whose real meaning is that he was able to bring Christianity and replace the Druid faith.
So is this a kind of typical, we're talking here about, I don't know what era this would be referred to as, kind of between early church and before the medieval period. Is this typical for missionary efforts during this time, that they go there and find deeply entrenched and in some cases deeply hostile religious opposition to the Christian message?
What you just said is no doubt the case. In fact, the early missionary work of the British Isles as well as the continent is a remarkable series of truly heroic stories. We're told of St. Ninian, for example, who's up near Whithorn in Scotland, just north of Carlisle on the western coast of England. One can still see his cave. St. Ninian is said to have walked into the major camp of the Picts and to have preached Christ and had destroyed some of their holy trees and so forth. Well, this was remarkable. I mean, this take almost remarkable courage, almost a certain foolishness. But you have stories like this over and over. St. Boniface, the same way with his ministry to the Saxons in the northern part of what today is Germany. And the same would be true of St. Patrick. These were wild, pagan, tribal people who were warlike. I mean, their culture was that of the warrior. And in fact, if you look at St. Patrick's famous hymn that I alluded to earlier, "I bind myself today," you can sense this modulation of the warrior image over to Christ. He really is the true divine warrior. And the baptized faithful binds himself to this warrior. Jesus becomes the real tribal chieftain to whom you owe all of your allegiance unto death. I mean, he is really just describing in a wonderful way, in a hymnic way, the kind of warlike, tribal-based system that he knew when he went over to England, or rather Ireland, as a slave and then as a missionary.
Let's talk a little bit about that hymn itself. It's beautiful, but its emphasis, of course, is upon two things that dovetail beautifully: both the Trinitarian nature of God and the centrality of Christ in the church's proclamation. Talk about that hymn in that context, if you would, Dr. Weinrich.
Well, I find it remarkable, actually, that it has such an overt Trinitarian character. We think of the Trinity as kind of one of the hard things to talk about. But the fact is that a person like Patrick and others, the Trinity was a major force in converting people because it allowed them to speak of God who is intrinsically love. It allowed them to talk about a God whose communal character is the divine basis for a new community of faith, namely the church. So the fact that it's a Trinitarian hymn is remarkable in itself. Again, I note that you bind yourself kind of by way of an oath. Behind this notion of binding might well be the baptismal oath. After all, a warrior would swear in various ways to be utterly loyal to his tribal chieftain, to be the warrior whom that chieftain can count on. And so you have, you know, "I bind myself today, the power of God to hold and lead." You can see the warrior idea there. His eye to watch, his might to stay, his ear to hear, hearken to my need, against the demon snares of sin. And you can see how a person like Patrick, again, kind of modulates the idea of the enemy to a different kind of enemy, namely Satan, who brings you to an ethical destruction and not simply a military destruction. And so in many ways, these warlike images are kind of deeply embedded in terms of Christian proclamation, and were ready to hand kind of parabolic modes of speech rooted in reality, of course, of these ancient people. So it's a very effective hymn.
Finally, then, with about a minute, how does the church best everybody's remembering St. Patrick in ways that are trivial and ludicrous and as I said at the very beginning, in a lot of ways, completely unchristian? How does the church best remember this bishop, this saint, this missionary?
Well, I think the three kind of code words you just summarized your question with might be the way to do that. He was a bishop, he was a saint, and he was a missionary. He incorporates into himself, then, a saintliness in which there is this kind of fearless obedience to do the will of God, even in the most difficult circumstances. Today, in many ways, the Christian faith is under attack, and people have to stand up with some courage for what they believe to be true. He was a bishop of the church, that is to say, he was an ecclesial person. He wasn't a loner. So Christ leads us into a work in which he wishes his church to grow and to prosper. And he was a fighter against the demons. I mean, namely, false faith, false religion, but also a kind of a culture of brutality, in which the virtues of peace and holiness were to prevail. And so in many ways, as is always the case with these saints and these ancient missionary types, these monks and abbots and so forth, they are in their own way remarkable icons of lived faith. They are the reality of faith in the world. And as such, they are deserving of our praise, of our respect and our honor, and as on a day like today, our remembrance.
Dr. Bill Weinrich is professor of historical theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Dr. Weinrich, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure, Todd. Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Pastor Brian Wolfmiller, our ongoing series with him on responding to evangelical proof texts. We will take up Matthew 28, yes, indeed, the so-called Great Commission. Stay tuned.
Not only does our church need men right now, but the world needs men who will proclaim the gospel in its purity.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Dr. Peter Scare, Associate Professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
If when you go to sleep at night you're thinking about it, my experience with it is this, is that thought won't go away. So if you're going to bed at night thinking about following our Lord and becoming a preacher of this gospel, then I would love if you could come and visit Fort Wayne, our campus. We'd love to show you around and show you what it is that we do.
Have you ever considered becoming a pastor? Contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana at 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155, or visit ctsfw.edu. Christ-centered, cross-focused, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Hey, St. Louis. How would you like to achieve your fitness goals in a fun and supportive atmosphere? Hi, this is Kevin Reisick, owner and operator of Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois. We offer adult boot camps throughout the week. These camps include cardiovascular conditioning, muscular strength and endurance training, balance and coordination activities, and more. For more information, give me a call at 618-670-6952, Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois, 618-670-6952.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
old theology, new technology. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Bethany Lutheran College is pleased to sponsor Issues, Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio. Bethany Lutheran College is located in the picturesque river town of Mankato, Minnesota, and is committed to making Christian higher education affordable for all with generous financial aid packages available. At Bethany, you'll find stimulating academic programs, a friendly atmosphere, and opportunities to grow both in intellect and in your faith, all within the framework of a supportive Christian environment. For more information, visit us on the web at blc.edu.
For 20 years, we've lifted our voices and instruments to the hymns of Stephen Starkey. Now, CPH has the first ever CD collection of Pastor Starkey's works titled, We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God. This 12-track CD includes nearly an hour of music from the most beloved Lutheran hymn writer of our time. Order now. Use promotion code URA. We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God is only $15.99. CPH.org.